Welcome to the Newtown Big Dreams Podcast, an interview-style talk show that's your gateway to the fabulous and fascinating people who relocated to start a new life. Whether you're new to our podcast or your city, our fellow neighbors from across Canada, North America, and the entire English-speaking world share their stories of reaching new horizons and big dreams. So sit back and relax as we navigate in-depth and intimate conversations with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, executives, creatives, and anyone who can share their story about their Newtown big dreams. And now, here's your host, Luke J. Menkes.
Justina, thank you for coming to see me on a Sunday.
Yay, thanks for
having me. We've been friends, acquaintances for like 4 or 5 years now. Yeah. I think it was like 2013 when we first met.
Yeah, probably 2013, 2014.
So it's like coming up on 6 years.
Wow.
And I've seen you evolve as a person. You became a realtor.
Yeah.
But you've been in Kelowna for a long time, a lot longer than I have.
Yeah.
Tell us the story of how you ended up here.
Well, my parents moved from Edmonton, Alberta to Kelowna in 1992. And actually, they moved to Penticton. And they spent probably 6 or 7 years in Penticton and then moved to Lake Country and spent 3 or 4 years there. And then they moved to Kelowna and then they moved again within Kelowna. And now they actually have moved to West Kelowna. So I, as a child, was taken on the ride.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you, did you ever consider living someplace else, or was it, this was always where you were?
That's a good question. I never really thought about living somewhere else. You know, everyone, when they graduate high school in Kelowna, at least several years ago, wanted to get out of the small town world. And I didn't. I really liked Kelowna. I really liked the vibe, and I could see that the community was growing.
Mm-hmm.
I went to university here and college because it was easier to stay at home. And
so, is that the college on KLO?
Yes.
Or UBCO?
Yeah, I went to Okanagan College and then transferred to UBCO.
Mm.
And in my time at UBCO, I did go and live in New Zealand for a while and do some schooling and a semester there and then some traveling around as well. But then I came back, and Kelowna has just always been a good place to come back to.
Yeah. And I mean, you've seen some tremendous change.
Huge.
My first vacation here was 2004, and it's changed a ton since then.
Yeah.
I mean, the university was kind of like a little campus.
Just a hub. Yeah.
Now it's like almost a city.
Yeah.
With like overpasses and
huge buildings. It's the city on the hill.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The growth. And I don't know if you know this, but there's like 2 other ways to get in now.
Yes, they've opened
the
roads.
Come up through Arab Road and off of Glenmore. And
that's, I mean, those have been, everyone's been praying for those for a long time.
Yeah, I've been hearing about that for years. And then I just kind of made a wrong turn and I'm like, wow, I'm at Arab Road all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It's really neat, actually. And I think well needed, because only having the highway to get to the university meant that if anything happened, any accident, delay, anything, then everyone is kind of hooped.
Yeah, totally true. So when did you decide to become a realtor?
When did I become decide? I decided somewhere in between my last year of university and the following year. Mm-hmm. I did some contract work right out of university for an offshoot organization of the U.S. government that looked for missing prisoners of war and bodies from past wars, and did some forensic geography type stuff for them. And then somewhere between that contract ending and having to figure out what to do with the rest of my life, a bunch of different arrows and people sort of said, you should start getting into real estate, but more so from the investing side of things.
Yeah.
And I went to dozens of different real estate investing courses and started learning about analyzing numbers and finance sheets and all that kind of stuff. And then at some point in one of those courses, I was sitting there and I thought, in every single one of these courses I've gone to, at some point, every investor needs a realtor. They need somebody who gives them that information or shows them the house or writes the contract, plays that middle person.
Yes.
And I went, what better way for me to be relevant to this industry that I want to be investing in myself than to be a realtor and have access to all that information at the same time and be able to make money from the real estate side of things, helping other people buy and sell, but then also use that same money to invest myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's so important. It's similar to the legal profession in the sense mm-hmm. that people say, if a lawyer represents himself, he's got a fool for a client.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there is the emotional aspect of it.
Totally.
And even investors, they get excited.
Yeah.
You need someone to advocate for you, to just have a clear head, right? Negotiate on their behalf.
Yeah. And sometimes tell you when you're off track.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And even with sophisticated investors, I find it's always good to have an advocate, someone on your side.
Yeah.
Right. So, and you know, people think, well, I know so much about real estate, I'm going to list by myself.
Yeah.
And actually, the more sophisticated people get, I find they always have a realtor. Yeah. Sometimes two or three realtors, but
yeah, people understand. If people understand the value of a professional, mm-hmm. they will hire a realtor to do the job that they're meant to do. If you have to get dentist work done, you don't go, oh, that's okay, I can just do it myself, that's fine, I can Google this.
Yeah.
I can, you know, do myself by dental.
Buy some equipment.
And, you don't do that. You go, okay, I need dental work. This is a highly skilled procedure. I'm going to hire a professional to do it. Same thing with real estate. Selling real estate is not this easy thing that everyone thinks it is.
Right.
There is actual skill involved in it. And that's why you hire a professional to be your advocate and to do that work so you don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm. So you started in the investment world. Mm-hmm. What was your biggest surprise when you became a realtor?
Biggest surprise when I became a realtor.
Or was it all like smooth sailing and everything?
No, it wasn't smooth sailing. I think what just surprised me the most was that people, I had this theory when I was a kid that when you grew up, mm-hmm. you got to be an adult. And adults solved everything logically, sophisticatedly, and they talked out their problems. And if they had an issue with somebody else, they politely discussed their issue and then they moved on in the world.
Right.
And the more and more I got into sophisticated circles and spheres and investors and people in these high caliber scenarios, mm-hmm. the more you could see that really we're all kind of just children who are sometimes adulting and doing adult activities. And those playground emotions still come up alive for a lot of people. And I think I found that the most surprising because I just, for some reason, thought that everything would be very diplomatic and clean cut and clear. Yeah. And it's not.
People take things very personal.
Totally.
And I've noticed this with offers too. Like people say, well, let's just try what we'll offer.
Yeah.
And
yeah, what's I always explain. Trying?
Yeah, what's our return? I can always say no.
Yeah.
But I always explain the risk that person gets upset.
Yeah.
They feel like you're personally insulted.
Totally.
To you, it's just a number.
Yeah.
Right? And it may be more difficult to get concessions and get them to really open up and talk to us.
Yeah.
Right? If you come in like that.
Yeah. I always tell people there's a fine line between a low offer and a low ball offer. And that fine line is the seller being angry or not angry. And I mean, as seller's agents, we always prep people to know anybody who puts pen to paper, we just say thank you because at least they were more serious than the people who didn't.
Right.
But even if you tell people that, they still get mad when they see the number that is lower than what they were expecting or wanted.
Exactly.
I only know of one scenario where some buyers, not my clients, this is another associate in the office, but some buyers made an offer and it was so low that it pissed the seller off. Mm-hmm. And the seller was
refused.
I don't like these people. Tell them to go away. I'm not even going to entertain their offer.
Yeah.
And in that process, another offer came in that was lower than their asking price, but higher than the first offer. Mm-hmm. The first offer came back to the table with a much better, stronger offer over asking price. And the sellers were so mad at the people who had lowballed them the first time that they took the second offer that was lower because out of principle, they didn't want to sell their house to the people who lowballed.
Amazing. So amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about the 100 Awesome People Project. What is that?
The 100 Awesome People Project is a community initiative that features local people to the Okanagan that are doing either a business, a passion project, a side hustle, something that has a greater impact in the community than just themselves and their immediate spheres of influence. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that these people are higher level thinkers. They understand that their community, their friends and family are important, and they want to do something that impacts them, but they also want to impact the greater community and offer anything from food services to counseling to empowerment workshops to, I don't know, anything like that.
Right. Yeah. Anything that's giving back. So is there really 100 people like that?
There's almost 200 people that are featured now like that. Yeah, the first round of 100 was done in 2017. Mm-hmm. And then there were still more people to be interviewed that had been nominated. Wow. And so we started a second round in 2018. And that's the round that's wrapping now.
And what do you do? So you get together. You're all part of this group. And then what do you
do? Well, it's not really a...
It's a recognition.
It's a recognition. It's not really like a group or anything like that, other than all these people have a common collective thing now that they have been nominated on the 100 Awesome People. But the whole point is to give a focus and a feature to the projects or the businesses that these people are running, because there are so many awesome people in this community doing really cool things that you would never know if you just walk by them on the street. And for the most part, they are so humble about what they're doing that when I call them up or email them or text them and say, hey, you've been nominated for the 100 Awesome People Project, I want to interview you, they go, oh, I'm not awesome. I don't belong on that. I don't know.
Right.
And they're super, for the most part, they're super shy about it, or they're hesitant, or they don't see themselves as being awesome or as impactful as they are.
Right.
And then when you sit them down and you say, okay, tell me where you were born and how you got to here, and you go through their whole life story. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, you have to go, have you met you? Like, you're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then they kind of smile and they shy away from it still, but they are doing really awesome things.
It's a certain humbleness to a person like that. So what is your role with this group?
Yeah. So the group initially started with my friend Jennifer Thorne. She's a financial advisor at Odlum Brown. Her and I were on a hike in April or May of 2017, and I was dying because I was totally out of shape, and it was my first hike of the season. And Jen was kind enough to stay at the back of the pack with me while everyone else was sprinting ahead.
Right.
And as I was catching my breath, she said, she was at that time just venturing into financial advising. She was a litigation lawyer before that. She's also an awesome woman. And she said, man, I wish I could meet 100 people this summer that I could follow up with for business in the fall and winter, because nobody wants to talk about their finances in the summer. Everyone's busy partying and having fun and spending their money. And over the course of the hike, she kind of started talking herself out of it a little bit. And she goes, you know, 100's a lot of people, actually. And I have kids, and it's summertime, and 100 is a lot of people. And I said, well, it's not that many if we do it together. You meet 50, I meet 50, we introduce each other. And then we started talking and brainstorming. We thought, okay, the people we want to meet are going to be, you know, executive level people. They're going to be people, one, who have finances, because initially it was kind of a business venture or an idea. And we thought, okay, they're going to be higher level thinkers. They're going to have impact. They're probably doing cool stuff. Maybe we take a picture of them, write a little blurb about what we've learned about them, and then we share it. So what's the best medium? Instagram, visual, and we'll share it with people. And we thought, okay, yeah, we can do this. And we started featuring people. And I would say within the first 15 to 20 features, we got a message into our inbox on Instagram, and we went, oh, what's this? Like, we didn't even know. Neither of us was really on Instagram at the time, and we thought, we didn't know we could get messages. And it was somebody saying, hey, I saw your guys's page. I want to nominate this person. You should interview them. And we went, oh, we have no process for nominations. Like, what do we do with this? And
now what year is this?
This is 2017. I know it's insane. I wasn't on Instagram in 2017. It was a whole new world.
same with me. I think I had an account, but I didn't really use it.
Yeah. I didn't see it or understand the value and power of it until we started this project, really. And then I started a personal one too. But yeah, we got that nomination, and then we thought, okay, this is kind of cool. People are engaging with this project, and it very quickly took on a life of its own. And the whole business aspect of it kind of got left in the wayside, because there were so many cool people, awesome people that were being sent to us. And once you start interviewing awesome people, they run in spheres of other awesome people. So then at the end of each interview, we ask them, who do you want to nominate, or can you think of anyone? And of course, they've got two or three different names. So it just fueled the 100 for the whole batch. We pumped out 100 features between April and May of 2017 and December 31st of that year.
Wow.
We were going for 3 or 4 hours of coffee each week in order to put out 3 to 4 posts the following week.
So the posts would be a summary of the conversation?
Yeah, the posts would be a summary of the conversation or a snippet about the business or project that they were doing. Now, when we first started the project, there really wasn't a criteria for what we were defining as awesome. That came on later on in 2018 because we realized we kind of needed to have a criteria. Yeah. But in 2017, we basically featured anyone that got nominated and anyone that seemed really cool and mm-hmm. was available to talk to us.
Very cool.
Yeah.
It sounds similar to the way this podcast has started.
Yeah.
So how did you come up with questions to ask people? Was it just tell us what you do, tell us what you're working on?
Yeah.
And conversational. So you didn't like record the interview or transcribe it.
No.
You would take notes.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Jen and I both had very different interview styles. We never sat in on each other's interviews, so I actually don't know what her interviews looked like. I only got to see the posts afterwards when it was her turn to post. But my interview style is very conversational and I'm very interested to know people's story. So I always ask people to take me back to the beginning. Where were you born? Where'd you go to school? What was your childhood dream? What did you do after high school? Where did you go? How did your life evolve to the point that you got to here doing whatever cool or awesome business or side project that you're doing?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So aside from this hike, what is it in your past that kind of led you to get involved with this? So the hike, you have the conversation, you're like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
But there must have been something in your past that kind of made this an attractive proposition for you.
I'm very community oriented. And
you always have been?
Yeah. I've always been very community centric. Well, maybe not always. If you ask anybody I went to high school with, I probably wasn't the nicest person in the world. But post high school and into college and university, I really started to see the value in community. I would look around in the collegiates and the different pods that show up on a campus, right? And you see pods of either students who are of the same faculty or the same sport or something like that. There was something that was bringing these little tight-knit groups of community together. And I thought, that's really cool. And because I moved around from Penticton to Lake Country to Kelowna, and then again, I never really had a childhood, you know, group of friends or a pod of friends that you could cling to. Mm-hmm. And when I was in college and university, seeing that on campus and seeing how people were connecting, I thought there's something about this that's really powerful. Mm-hmm. And then when Jen started talking about, you know, I want to meet 100 people that are have a similar characteristic or trait, I thought, oh, okay, this is cool. This is what communities are made of. People who share something in common that bind together.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Totally makes sense. So what is JCI Kelowna?
JCI Kelowna is a group of young professionals under 40 who want to create positive, meaningful change in the community.
What does it stand for?
JCI. Junior Chamber International.
Okay.
Yeah. Junior Chamber International. The Kelowna chapter is made up of, I would say, some of the coolest people in town. And I might be biased because I'm part of it, but it's another one of those places where community is extraordinarily strong. Like I have never met a group of people that are more invested in each other and each other's success than in JCI Kelowna. And it's just, it's one of those things that's like anything. You get in what you, or you get out what you put in. Mm-hmm. And there are a ton of JCs that put in their heart and soul, I would say, into that organization. And it's, I think for a lot of them, because that's their people. Like they may have moved to Kelowna or maybe they grew up here. And like me, they just didn't have that click of community or that group of people that they really clicked with. Mm-hmm. And then they find the JCs and they see all these cool projects and outings and events and gatherings that are happening and all these people that come to them and really engage and want to be there. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, I think it's become their family. And I think that that's pretty
cool. What do you do at JCI?
Me personally or like as an organization?
Yeah, well, you personally.
Me personally, I just hang out.
So you're one of the members.
I'm a member.
How many people in Kelowna?
The JC's is, I think, somewhere around 80 members right now. Yeah.
So you've got a lot of meetings to attend to.
Yes. Lots of meetings. Lots of meetings.
I think it's safe to say you're an extrovert. Is that true?
Yeah. I would say I'm an extroverted introvert, introverted extrovert, something like that. I'm an ambivert. Yeah. I mean, I love being around people and hearing their stories and having those meaningful connections, not just being surrounded by people. I could go to a coffee shop and I don't find meaning in that.
Right.
But I also really enjoy just my downtime, my alone time, and being able to go out into nature or just hang out at my house in my pajamas because I never get to be at home.
Right. Yeah. Totally get that. So you love books. Yeah. I know you love, you're a big reader. What are you reading right now? Or something you finished recently that you think everybody should read? Do you mostly read fiction or is it nonfiction?
It's evolved. It's evolved over time. I used to pretty much only read fiction, which was dangerous because, and I don't read fiction now because it's dangerous for me.
How come?
Because I don't eat. I don't sleep. Wow. I don't talk to anybody. I don't do anything. I mean, if I could crawl inside the pages of the book, I'm there. I am the main character. It's the same thing when I watch movies. So my friends don't like going to the movies with me because I'm the one who's screaming at the TV screen or the theater screen and don't do it. Don't go in there. But yeah. Okay. So I used to always read fiction type stuff. And then I started getting into historical fiction, which I found really fascinating because there's some loose basis of reality in historical fiction. Mm-hmm. And now I read a lot of self-development and kind of self-perpetuating books that help you gain insight to yourself or to business or whatever. Mm-hmm. The book I'm reading right now is called The One Thing.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I've read it.
I've heard it twice. Audio.
Oh, okay.
I love audio books because I'm in my car a lot.
Yeah.
And I like to go for walks when the weather's a little bit better.
Yeah.
And so audio books are just great.
Yeah, totally.
They're, professional actors.
Yeah.
Voice actors. It's not some jackass in his basement. Yeah. So it's like, it's really, really good.
Yeah, totally.
You know? And
if you ever want to listen.
Such a great book.
Yeah. If you ever want to listen to an audiobook that is, I hesitate to say dry, like the voiceover guy who's doing it.
Yeah.
Just sounds like he's from a different decade and era. And I mean, it probably was recorded decades ago. It's the book called The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles.
Wow.
It's a really good book. If you can get past the voice and if you can get past the first couple of chapters, it's a fantastic book. It's not based in theory and stuff. It's more of a pragmatic book. And they say, you know, if you're reading this book, take it as fact, just as much fact as physics and mathematics. What we're saying is basically the gospel truth. Mm-hmm. If you want to understand how we got to these facts that we're giving you, read X, Y, and Z in the, you know, appendix at the back or whatever.
Right.
It's a really neat book though. And it talks about basically the science of getting rich, not just in the monetary aspect, but in all aspects of your life. How do you enrich your life? Mm-hmm. As a science, how do you pragmatically actually do this on a day-to-day basis?
And it's called The Science of Getting Rich.
The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace D. Wattles, narrated by the oldest sounding man in the world.
Interesting.
Just because of how he thought.
Yeah, some voices are just so extraordinary.
Yeah.
That name almost sounds like Dr. Seuss type.
Yeah, like a character.
Wallace D. Wattles.
It's amazing. If you ever want to hear a guy who has a really cool voice here in town, Gary Johnston is a voiceover actor. He was a radio talk show host for a really long time in the Kootenays.
Yeah.
And he just has the most deep bellowing voice that could soothe you and put you to sleep any night.
Love it. Love it. So give us a quick synopsis of The One Thing. I could talk about it for hours.
I haven't finished reading it yet, but my understanding.
Tell us what you like about it so far.
Yeah, my understanding of The One Thing is that by the time I'm done, that I will know what that one thing is. The premise is that we get bogged down with so many to-do lists and miscellaneous things that we're supposed to do in a day, but rather than a to-do list, the one thing teaches you to have a success list, and it teaches you to pare down and figure out what is the one thing I can do today that will get me further towards that one goal, my ultimate right. goal that I'm trying to achieve.
Right. And the one thing that will make everything else on this list either easier to accomplish or totally unnecessary.
Exactly.
So like the dominoes.
Yeah.
Right? You got to push the first one first.
Yeah.
And then the rest easily fall in.
Exactly.
Right? So yeah, it's really cool. It talks about multitasking and the myth of multitasking and the value of being able to focus and prioritize.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you can tell, we've been living this book for a while.
Well, I think it's so cool because even in my own day-to-day, I always have a list of things that I need to do, and some are more relevant than others, and some you want to do because you go, at least I get to check something off the list, you know, right away.
Yeah.
But the reality is it's always that one thing that you're like, okay, once I've done all these menial tasks, then I'll do that super important task. And if you got to the end of the day and you didn't do it, you're like,
Too tired.
One thing I should have really done first, but at least I got all the other things checked off, right? And this book is talking about switching that. Do that one thing that you just don't want to do, but you know is needing to be done.
Exactly. Yep. And tell us about real estate a little bit. So you're an expert. You've been doing it for many years. What is the biggest mistake new investors make when it comes to real estate?
Biggest mistake that new investors make. Or a common mistake. I would say the biggest mistake that, or a common mistake that real estate investors make is trying to time the market.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can look historically back and see market trends and where they go up and they go down and when the peaks and the valleys are, and they're pretty consistent. But what I find is that everyone's always looking for a deal, mm-hmm. whether it's somebody buying their principal home or buying an investment property, people always want a deal. And so when they try and time the market to get the bottom of the market so they get the absolute best deal, it's either you're just before it or just after it. And sometimes you luck out and you actually get the bottom of the market, but there's no set day that says, okay, this is it. This is going to be the absolute bottom. Prices are going to be at their rock. And from there on, it's going up or it's going down.
That's right.
And people are always trying to find that one day, and it's impossible.
You know, it's counterintuitive because I read a lot of stock market theory, and I used to play in the stock market before real estate.
Yeah.
And what it is when the last person has invested their last nickel into the market, there's nobody left except for a seller.
Yeah.
There's always someone who needs to sell because someone got sick or they want to buy something else or, life you know, they have money problems or they just want to cash in.
Yeah.
So there's always sellers. But when the last person has put their last dollar in, that's the top.
Yeah.
But the thing is, everybody's trying to get their money in because they think it's going to go up forever.
Yeah.
And that's the top when everybody, you know, like somebody said, I went to Vegas, my cab driver and the cleaning lady at my hotel, they were talking about their real estate portfolio.
Yeah.
And that was right. They don't know anything about real estate. And that was right before the big crash.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a good sign. When people who don't know anything about it are saying, I got to get into it, then it could be a problem.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, people get amnesia in real estate cycles. You know, if a real estate cycle is 10 years, at year 8, everyone gets amnesia. And it's, will the market ever come down?
Yeah. This time it's different.
It's different. It's going to go up forever. And then as soon as the market starts to come down, it's, oh, the sky is falling. The market is crashing. Will it ever come back up again? And it's just, everyone gets amnesia either at year 4 in a cycle or year 8 in a cycle.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see. But I think the other common mistake that investors tend to make is not understanding their spreadsheets when they're analyzing an investment property. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything could be a good investment if you throw enough money at it. Yeah. Anything can cash flow if you throw enough money at it. But knowing where your investment dollar point is in order to get the best ROI on a property and for it to make sense as a cash flowing investment. I think a lot of people Google, you know, how do I analyze a cash flow property? And they get these half-assed worksheets that they try and fill numbers in on, but they don't necessarily understand every number that they're looking at or the importance of knowing what your ROI is.
Yep. And that's why they need to hire
an expert professional.
For sure. So where do you think we are right now in Kelowna?
I think we are coming out of the peak. I mean, if you look at here, what I see is the trend is about 10 years from peak to peak or so. And I mean, like I said, it's not one day peak to peak. The year 10 is like year 9 and 10 are kind of your peaks, and then you come out of them. So I think we're coming out of a peak, which...
So 2016, would you say was the peak?
Yeah, I would say 2016 to 2018 was that kind of two-year peak spread. Somewhere in 2017 was like your major peak, or your ultimate one, your one-day peak.
Yeah.
And then, yeah... That goes in line with 2006 leading up to 2008. That was sort of your 2 years of accelerating straight up into the peak, and then it crashed out and we went down for about 4 or 5 years, and then it started to climb again.
Yeah.
So peak to peak is about 10 years and peak to trough is about 5.
So do you think we're about halfway through a soft market right now or not quite? We're still got a ways to go.
I think we still got a ways to go. Like, I mean, we're 2019 now. So in theory, if you're following that 10 year cycle, 2018 was the peak, end of the peak. And 2019 should be the beginning of the softening for a few years. And then it'll, you know, we've got, I think it's what, between 2,500 and 3,000 condo units slated to be finished built in the next 2 to 3 years, 2 to 4 years, which, I mean, hoorah if Kelowna's population and demand buys all of those in the next 4 years. But otherwise, there is a potential for a surplus, which is what investors look for. And they swoop in and they buy a whole bunch of inventory, and then there's a shortage. And then suddenly we're going up the bell curve again. Right?
Yeah, yeah. This time, it feels like 9 years to me, just looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
So I think we're kind of 2 years into that. The softness.
Yeah.
Because since like early 2018, it's been really soft from my perspective.
Yeah.
Right. So we're kind of getting into the second year of that. But yeah. We'll see.
I feel like there was a good burst of activity probably up until like August of 2018.
Okay.
And then it's, and then I started to notice the numbers really softening as well.
Right.
And even continuing now. But I mean, the hard part for the general public is that they only get 12 data points in a year, and it's always retrospective, right? Here's what happened last month. And in the meantime, the media is picking up all the hype about whatever the latest news trend is. And so for the public, I think it's hard for them to gauge until they get 4 to 6 data points for them to really feel like, where is the market going? And that makes it challenging when you're working day to day on the ground with them, trying to say, well, this is actually what we're seeing on the ground today, not based on last month.
Yeah. Have you always been a dancer?
Yeah, I have always been
like a dancer. Like since you were a little kid?
Yeah, I started off in ballet, which most kids hate when their parents are forcing them to go to ballet. I really like the tutu part of it.
Right.
That was my favorite part, is at the end of class, they let you put your tutus on and run around the room. And like many children, as soon as I had the authority and liberty to say, I don't want to do this anymore, I said, I don't want to do this anymore. Now I really regret that, because I wish that I had stuck with ballet, and I went back to it later on in life. So I started off in ballet, stopped for a bit, and then continued with ballet and hip hop and contemporary. And then in Kelowna, when I turned 18, there really wasn't anything for adult dance classes. So this was several years ago, because there's a whole bunch of options now. But at that time, basically, if you turned 18 and you weren't a prima ballerina, or you weren't going into a professional dance company, like, you were old, hang up your shoes, you can retire, like, you're done.
Right.
And so I kind of stopped dancing for the 2 years that I went to college right after high school. And then when I joined the University of British Columbia, Okanagan, UBCO, I found the Latin Dance Club, and I went, oh my gosh, there's adults that are dancing. I can learn another dance. And I fell in love with salsa and bachata at that time.
Was it hard to learn?
Yes, because every dance that I had ever done since I was a kid was a solo style dance. You could dance in a troupe or on a team. And every dance I did, we entered competitions in choreographed competition. But we were all individuals. Like, you might prop up somebody else for a move or something, but everyone was dancing by themselves. When you go into something like Latin dance, salsa, bachata, kizomba, which is not technically Latin, but it gets lumped in there, when you go into these partner style dances, it's a conversation and it's a relationship for the 3 minutes that you're with that person. And as a solo dancer, oh man, I was back leading everything. I was like, I got this. I know what I'm doing. Oh, you want me to turn? Here, I'll just do two turns. Oh, you only wanted one? Oh, well, too bad, I did two. I mean, it was so hard learning to have that conversation, because it's not giving up control. As a follow in a lead dance, lead follow scenario, the lead is making an offer or presentation of a move that they want you to do. They're hoping that you're going to do it. And as a follow, it's your job to respond and to take the opportunity. But if you were coming from a solo dance background where you were an independent woman who could do whatever she wanted and whatever move she wanted, every time I got a lead, I was doing something else that I thought that they wanted me to do because I thought I knew what the move was. And it took me a good few years to learn.
Wow. Did you ever have somebody get mad at you?
No.
What the hell are you doing?
No. Dancers are too polite for that. Yeah. Right. Yeah, they'll just politely say thank you and walk away at the end of the dance. I never ask you again.
Very interesting. So it's strictly recreational. It's not competitive, is it?
No, I don't do competition, but the Kelowna Salsa community, which probably be rebranding in the summer because we do a lot more than just salsa now. But the Kelowna Salsa community as it is now, we travel a lot. So we travel around Canada and North America, and some of us are hoping to go to Europe soon to go to dance congresses, which are basically 3 to 4 days of workshops with the world's best instructors in whatever genre you're trying to learn in, and then social dancing from basically 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. Wow. Every night.
That sounds awesome.
It is amazing. It's exhausting, and you sleep for a solid day when you come back, but it's exhilarating.
Fantastic. Well, what's your favorite thing in Kelowna?
Oh, my favorite thing, Kelowna.
Ooh, is it like restaurants? Is it the dancing?
I love dancing. And it's definitely one of, I have too many favorites. I don't think I can pick one. Dancing is one of them. Ice cream is one of them. Parlor Ice Cream Downtown is amazing. Oh, yeah, if you want gelato, QB Gelato is amazing. There's just so many. I think the problem is that doing the 100 Awesome People project means that I'm aware of too many awesome people now in Kelowna. So to pick them, I'm like, I could just pull up my list of awesome people and just say, these are all my favorite things in Kelowna, because they're all doing really cool stuff. And the problem with knowing about them is that I want to be involved in all of them, but there's literally not enough hours a day to do 200 different projects.
So true. So true.
Yeah.
Who would you like to nominate? Who would you like to hear be interviewed on this show?
I think somebody that would be really cool to be interviewed and to share their message is Yuriko Larson. She runs a company called Vintage Origami, and it is an incredibly unique wedding planning company.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Basically, my understanding of it, and Yuriko could probably correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that if a couple wants to hire Vintage Origami to do their wedding, Yuriko sits down with them, learns all about them, figures out what their favorite things are, their favorite memories, their favorite colors, foods, their preferences, basically everything about their life that could be important to them. And then she plans a custom wedding based on that they don't get a say in. They probably have some variation of say into it, but it's not like she's consulting them for every napkin and little cup holder thingy. She plans this very customized wedding for them. So it's as much a surprise to the bride and groom on the day of as it is to their guests what the full package looks like. And again, I think they probably get some say into some of the details, but the full package is a surprise for everyone. Yeah. So a lot of trust in that, which I think is a very cool thing.
I think she's probably got some great stories.
Oh, yeah. So. If you ever check out her Instagram page, the weddings that she has planned and just the visuals, and you only get to see snippets, right? Because on Instagram, you're just seeing pictures of parts and pieces of it.
Yeah.
But they're just absolutely stunning.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Justina, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
It's been great chatting with you. We got to do it more often.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. See you soon.
Thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Newtown Big Dreams podcast with your host, Luke Menkes, and his authentic guests. And we love our listeners and hope you subscribe now to learn more about the amazing journeys of our incredible guests who relocated to find a new town, big dreams. And remember, make your dreams big.